I've had a man-zombie takeout since I was 8. It's the source of my power. They tell me the weather, the time of day, if there's a pileup on Route 66.
Welcome to episode 146 of Zombie
Takeout,
the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted for our change.
All right. Nice.
This is from John Phillips via our Facebook page in reference to last week's episode, 2012. He said, "Of course Africa will survive. The extreme environmentalists keep Africa from developing to be like the rest of the world. So it's pure with no pollution, so the human race can go back to nature. 2012, a pure propaganda film, just like his Day After Tomorrow."
You know what? I'm surprised we did not even mention Day After Tomorrow in that episode.
I've never seen it, so it wouldn't have come to my mind.
Because it just plays into the rant I had about all of his movies being exactly the same thing.
Okay, yeah.
What was the difference between the two movies, really?
I have, like I said, I've only seen bits and pieces of 2012. Or Day After Tomorrow, I should say.
But I don't know if that's why Africa would survive. At least in the movie that we had seen, it was pretty much, I guess, either seismic luck or dumb luck
either
that
one.
It survived.
There was no environmental message there. It was just it was time for the apocalypse.
Right.
I haven't seen Day After Tomorrow. I'm sure it's, and obviously it's a message film. I'm sure it's very heavy-handed because Emmerich doesn't do anything subtle.
That's all he does.
I won't get into the whole propaganda angle, but you know, in 2012, it was just pure luck.
But you can't deny he does enjoy destroying America.
It was just
only so many times you could film the White House blowing up or being demolished or whatever.
Yeah, true. It was just luck and a convenient excuse for the whole back to Africa, you know, going back to where we started angle.
You know, when you say back to Africa, I always think of something else for some reason. And it's never positive.
Completely unintended. But I'm saying, you know, the human race started in that part of the world. He was basically saying we're going back to that part of the world.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Enough about that crappy movie.
Yes, yes. Moving on. We've got some news. The only story from Cinema Blend. Kevin Smith wants Clerks 3 in theaters by 2014. I assure you, Kevin Smith's Clerks franchise is open. Though it might not be for much longer. The director has stated that his third Clerks film would be his final theatrical effort, and now he has an idea of when he'd like to have it in theaters for fans to see. In an interview with Good Day LA, a local Los Angeles morning program, Smith opened up about his successful podcast network, his plans to do the hockey drama Hit Somebody as a miniseries, and his hopes to have Clerks 3 released by 2014, to neatly coincide with the 20th anniversary of the original, which came out in 94. So it's clear now that I was right about Smith's retirement being much like Ozzy's or Robert Smith's.
Yeah.
He's not going to retire.
Still don't entirely buy it, you know, that he's retiring, but
Hit Somebody as a miniseries, I'm very interested in seeing, especially given the story.
Right.
It's going to be a six-parter. It mentions later in the article. Network to be determined. As for Clerks 3... The Clerks movies are by far my favorite of his movies.
Yeah.
But I think 2 wrapped it up very nicely.
It did, didn't it?
It
I don't know.
It really came to a beautiful conclusion. We don't need a third.
Unless they're not even following Dante and Randall. I don't know.
Well, I think he said there was a video in the article that went along with it. And he said he mentioned Anderson and Dante and Brian O'Halloran. Jeff Anderson and Brian O'Halloran.
Yeah.
So it will be Dante and Randall.
Huh.
So I don't know what the story is, where they have to go from there. Maybe they're passing it on to their sons.
Oh. Although yeah, I did not think of that.
It's only been a few years since the last one.
Has it?
Maybe 5-6 years.
So it feels like it's been longer now, doesn't it?
I know it was after I moved, so it's been within the last 10 years easily.
2006, so
Okay.
7 years ago.
It was close.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the handing on off to their son, unless they fast forward a bit, isn't going to work.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the story is.
Yeah, we'll just have to give him a chance.
All right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 2000, Psycho Beach Party. And of course, that brings us to Scotto's impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Rotating Circles, inducing psychotic episodes since the 1950s.
And also brought to you by ice cream sandwiches for those lonely nights at the drive-in. Well, what we have here, we have this girl who just doesn't fit in, a misfit, who wants to decide she wants to become a surfer. The only thing is, she's not just any ordinary girl. She has multiple personalities. Unfortunately, in this version, we only see two of them, but you know.
Well, two of the extra personalities, counting
Yes.
his personality.
Yes. She, well, she does make friends with the surfers, mostly because of her extra personality as one of the icebreakers.
Yeah, but particularly with the head of the surfers.
Yes, the head of the surfer is quite enamored by her alternate dominatrix personality. But meanwhile, people are turning up dead. They're being killed, and nobody's quite sure who. They're coinciding with a lot of her blackouts, so she's wondering throughout the film if she is in fact the murderer herself. Let's see. The other things really you could say is that there's also a movie star hanging out with them, and she's kind of, well, she's had enough of Hollywood, so she's taking a break. And the, of course, climax is at a luau, which everybody is invited to, and her mother is a bitch,
Who
and
is also made out to possibly be the murderer.
yes, and then it all comes to a head. Hilarity ensues.
Now, I loved the beginning because it's a brilliant head fake and it is very Hitchcock.
Oh yeah.
It starts off black and white with this, biker pulling up to a diner, and there's this woman he goes to see who's in this box. Who's sort of, there's a cardboard box and a curtain around her, and he's asking her to come with him, and then it's revealed that she has three heads, and then you find out that that's a movie within the movie.
Right.
Now, we should say right off the top, based on a play by Charles Bush by the same title, you were
Yes.
in the play in college,
Yes.
so you know the source material.
I'm gonna say up front, the movie is kind of disappointing compared to the original source material.
Okay.
Well, because you remember those Charles Bush
Oh,
plays.
yeah.
They were a joke a minute, you know? I mean, they really just there was no pause or plot or anything. They were just a machine gun of jokes,
But
a
I should also mention
barrage.
that the two of us were in a number of Bush plays in college as well
Yeah, we pretty much
at
did
OCC.
almost all of his plays from the 80s. I look there.
Okay.
I missed Vampire Lesbians of Sodom. I think he did that like the year before and the year after
Yeah, because
I
I
was
was in that.
there. And then there was also something like Sleeping Beauty that I missed out on too. But all of the other ones, I think I've been a part of somehow.
Wow.
But the play is quite different from it. There is not a murderer in the play.
Oh, really?
It's a phantom shaver.
Wow.
Somebody shaving people's heads and body hair.
Nice.
And if I'm not mistaken, I do believe that does turn out to be Chiclet.
Oh, wow.
Because it's Anne Boven, the dominatrix personality.
Okay, so we're gonna disagree on the movie, but now I completely understand why, because I don't know the source material.
Yeah.
It's kind of a reverse of some of our other reviews, Dune, Airbender. I will say though that Lauren Ambrose definitely handled the personality changes beautifully.
Yes.
Because they're vastly different characters. You have the dominatrix, you have the urban chick. I'll just put it that way. And that I could swear there was a fourth who popped up very briefly, but I don't.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, you know what? The other personalities in the play were very brief, too. But there were some very funny ones, like a male model.
Well.
Like some old top radio talk show host.
There's a scene towards the end where she's under hypnosis, where she's going through them very quickly,
Yes.
which was
Yes,
awesome.
that's the scene that, yeah.
And I could have swore there was a fourth, maybe a fifth in there.
That's actually where the source material kind of fell a little flat, was towards the end when they were revealing the the why she was the way she was.
And also, there's a character who's a foreign exchange student named Lars, who becomes very important. I don't think we should reveal why.
Yeah, actually, let me anybody that was murdered in the movie was not in the original. It was not in
Oh,
the source
okay.
material. And the police officer and detective were not in the original either.
Yeah, actually, I have some trivia on that. In the original 87 production, Charles Bush played the role of Chicklet.
Right.
He decided that he might not be believable in the role of a 16-year-old girl, saying, "While I can still manage with the aid of a sympathetic cameraman to play a sophisticated 25, 16 would be a stretch," he created the character of Monica Stark for the movie, so he could be in it.
And the version I had, and maybe this is also why it was kind of a letdown too, there is a scene in the original, a love scene with her using, or him, using a very obvious body double.
That's in the plot in the movie. I didn't see it in my version either. I didn't know it's in my notes.
It was cut
Might
from
have been
like,
cut from this version.
yeah. But I remember seeing it when I saw this movie originally.
Same here.
I saw that first, but it was
Yeah.
kind of like it was probably one of the
Yeah, it was the
funniest.
best parts.
Yeah.
Because I've seen this. This is probably the fourth or fifth time I've seen it. A couple of years ago, when I had pay channels, I think it was HBO played it repetitively.
I thought it
So.
was like a Showtime movie,
Could have been
actually, or
Showtime. I had
something.
HBO and Showtime, so it could have been
Yeah.
Showtime. But they played it a lot, like 3 times a day. So
Yeah.
I've seen it probably 5 times at this point. And I know that you mentioned it. I did notice that that scene was cut.
And if we probably, I don't think we've mentioned this up front. If you're not familiar with Charles Bush, the key element of his plays are dudes in drag.
Yes. And a lot of sex.
Yes. Yes. So it was kind of toned down in the movie version of this. Actually, the play wasn't, had only a few things that I can vaguely remember about it. But yes, that is the key to Charles Bush.
Now, there's a character named Lars, who's a foreign exchange student in the movie, played by Matt Keisler. Now, like I said, I've seen this years ago, but I had forgotten he was in the movie when I first really became aware of him in a series called The Middleman, which is a great show. Only lasted a season, but it's one of those
Oh.
cult shows that it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And that character is very different, very sort of a federal agent, very straight kind of federal agent, very straightforward type of basically based on the classic, good guy cowboy. So seeing him as the foreign exchange student with the thick Swedish accent was quite the surprise.
I'd forgot he was in there because he wasn't in the
Yeah.
original.
Also, Brodine, Chiclet's sidekick, really reminded me of Marcy from Peanuts. Had to be inspired by her.
Yes, definitely.
And I will say, I think Bush may have given the best performance in the movie, aside from possibly Lauren Ambrose.
Really,
Most entertaining, at least.
honestly, though, I think one of the funniest performances in this movie, and maybe it's because I've watched a lot of Criminal Minds,
Okay.
is to see Thomas Gibson
Yeah.
just mugging it up.
See, I'm not that familiar with him. I've seen him in maybe, I know I've
He's.
seen him in other things, but not a lot of it.
He plays a tight ass in Dharma and Greg, right?
That's where I know him from. Okay.
That's kind of for laughs tight ass. Criminal Minds, he is the ultimate tight ass.
Okay.
Serious. I don't think he's cracked a smile in the entire, like, 10 years the show has been on.
Wow. Okay, so that was quite the departure, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like Kiesler was for me, going from
Yeah,
Middleman to this.
I think this is like right before Criminal Minds, so.
And it was, it was a few years before Middleman. I think Middleman
Yeah.
was like 2005. So that we both had that surprise. And I also loved the sort of barely masked homoerotic scenes between Yomo and Pro Yo yeah, Yo-Yo and Provolone.
Yeah, that subplot really got cut down in the movie.
That's in the play, okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's like a big we actually had the 1812 overture playing when they
Oh God.
finally kiss.
I really have to see the play.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking also, it could have just been our production of it.
Yeah,
Our
yeah.
production was fucking insane. Okay, we haven't said this yet. I played the mom.
I was waiting for you to drop that.
It was, and the
Just
mom.
pause the podcast. If you're listeners, pause the podcast. Go to our about page. Take a look at Scott's picture.
Yeah.
He played the mom.
See, that was, I mean, it was something a director just couldn't resist, I mean, it was a very Milton Berle,
You another Charles Busch show we did at OCC, Theodora Shebich of Byzantium. You played Theodora.
Right, and that was the thing. The directors may not have even thought about casting a guy as the mom, but I came into that audition. It was probably one of the best auditions I ever had because I had just played Theodora like less than a year before this play, and I just took Marvel Ann's well-adjusted Presbyterian speech, and to see the look on the director's faces. When I finished that, I was like, "Yeah, I got a part." So, I was new on campus too, so it was kind of like it was a big deal to get something out of there.
Now, I don't recall. Did you shave for Theodora?
Oh yeah,
You did. Okay.
and I shaved for this too.
Okay, I wasn't,
And
I couldn't remember.
the great thing about this, I still had the long hair, so for this, we did not use a wig like Theodora.
Nice.
They put my hair up in like a Bride of Frankenstein kind of thing, and I had this insane mommy dearest, Joan Crawford makeup job.
Nice.
And the one of the funniest scenes I've ever been a part of was the fight scene. There was a fight scene in the play between me and Bernadine.
Wow.
So she's got like her pants up way too high, of course, and giant thick glasses and the hair in like pigtails kind of, and I'm in a dress, I did the crane,
Oh God.
and there was a
Nice.
lot there then just a lot of kung fu posing, and then it just devolved into like her jumping into my arms and beating my back and us screaming and jumping around. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Nice. But the subplot with Yo-Yo and Provolone, I have to admit, again, not knowing the source material, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they take every excuse to wrestle. That's pretty much
Yes.
all it is you want to wrestle.
Yeah, they did take it a bit further in the movie, and they were pretty funny, especially like the tanning lotion and stuff while they're wrestling.
And it leads to a great scene where Bush as Stark is basically trying to get them to come out. So
Yes.
you have Charles Bush in drag trying to get these two to come out, which I got a big kick out of.
Well, it was Starcat who was diagnosing.
We should mention Nicholas Brendon, from best known from Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
Yes.
plays a character named Starcat, who is basically a wannabe psychologist.
And probably the only time you will see Amy Adams in like a zombie takeout movie.
Probably, yes. I thought you were going somewhere else with that, and I was going to say, no, there are a couple more. No, I was a little disappointed about a couple of things. I think a lot of the characters could have been played a little bigger.
Oh yeah.
It
Oh,
was a bit
definitely.
low-key. It would have been great if they just all went Jeffrey Combs and just chewed the hell out of the scenery.
Yeah.
As it is really only Thomas Gibson and of course Bush were really doing that.
We're right.
And Lauren Ambrose in the alternate personalities.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they toned down the mom so much because it not even it, I mean, they took the Joan Crawford out of her. There's a scene in this where they reenact the scene from Mommy Dearest with the wire hanger where I was hitting Chiclet with the jock strap.
Nice.
Because, you know, the mom is very anti-male in the original play. There's none of this, you know, repressed, you know, getting it out kind of thing with the foreign exchange student that she was doing, flirting with men. No, she was just against, she was just anti-men, man-hating, you know, the whole play. So I don't know how, why she has a jock, Chiclet had a jock strap, but it was discovered. And, you know,
another one of the personalities.
I have to deliver this diatribe against, you know, the male body, and it's just, I mean, coming from me, it's pretty damn funny.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's how the first act ends, like the before the intermission is. So I'm taking the jock strap and beating her with it.
Oh God. Wow.
So instead, what they did here, it was more of a June Cleaver kind of thing.
Yeah,
instead,
kind of a little bit of Crawford. She was obsessed with perfection.
Yeah,
and cleanliness and all of that.
It was much more of a June Cleaver. What's the Brady mom? Or, you know,
Lawrence, Carol Brady.
Yeah. So it was much more subdued than, you know, oh, is it me that's doing this to her? You know, and that's just not as funny.
Mm-hmm.
But it is more human.
Yeah, yeah. True. I think it was because they were going for a mainstream audience. It was a movie.
Yeah.
So they had to. They couldn't go full bush on it.
Right.
Another thing I was a little annoyed with was the dance-off. It just went on way too long.
The dance-off?
At the beach, at the luau, there between Amy Adams' character and...
Oh, yeah.
There's this dance-off, which was a great gag for a few seconds.
Yeah.
They took it to about a minute.
But the luau, of course, was supposed to be the be-all, end-all thing, you know? Yeah.
And
they had to do something to make the luau go a little longer.
And it did fit the period. I mean, I get... what they were going for, it just dragged on a bit for me.
It's the spoof that he was working at.
Yeah, yeah.
Originally, Marvel Ann was played by a guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, because she's the popular girl.
Like, one of the things I'd read some of the original, like, reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Marvel Ann and Chiclet both played by guys.
But getting to the ending, I loved that her multiple personalities actually kind of saved her life.
Yes.
Because she's being chased by the killer, and she switches a few times, and it just kind of backs him off enough for her to get away in time for Stark to catch up with them.
Right, where the original source material kind of fails, you know, with the climax, the movie really does a lot better because they have... you know, more things they can do. They can have a chase scene. They can have the flashback scene. You know, it really did it a lot better.
And I do like that they really didn't make it obvious who did it.
Yeah.
They really made you think it was either Chiclet or the mother.
Right.
And the actual killer, you don't see much of, so you don't even consider them. And the nod to the Wizard of Oz at the end was awesome. The killer has been captured, and she's been saved, and suddenly she wakes up in an insane asylum, and is being taken for her treatment, which is electroshock. And she sees Starcat and a couple of the other characters in the asylum.
I had completely forgotten about that ending of this for some reason. I don't know why.
I just love that he went to the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Because this was
asylum.
This was written by Bush. He wrote the screenplay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like somebody else took his work and adapted it. He was in charge of this. He just, I think, toned it down a bit for a mainstream audience because, you know, they wanted to make money. You know, if it was a full-on Charles Bush movie, it would have shown in, you know, L.A. and New York, and, you know, maybe 100,000 people would have seen it. And it never would have gotten on television, even on the pay channels. Oh, one last bit of trivia. The play was originally called Gidget Goes Psychotic, but was changed due to concerns about copyright. That's why we're titling this episode that. We wanted to just nod to Bush and, you know, give it back its original title.
Yeah, I'm looking at the grosses, and honestly, He should have just stuck with his
The place.
stuck with what he wanted to do, you know, rather than tone it down.
Well, it yeah,
Because
it didn't exactly do well.
It only grossed 265,000.
Not horrendous. I mean, Battleship didn't even make 100 grand, so
it had a budget of 1.5 million. Well,
give it. Yeah,
Battleship had to have grossed more than 100,000.
No. I'm thinking it didn't break. It barely broke 100 million. I'm sorry. I was a decimal place off.
Yeah,
that was it. Was disappointing because it didn't break. It barely broke 100 million. That was the
right
problem. Wow.
Yeah, this did not break the
I was
mark.
Off. Wow, it didn't even hit 1 million.
I mean, ouch. I think it only, according to this, I think it only had like 7 screens.
Uh huh.
So. Yeah, why tone it down
mm-hmm.
if it's just going to play it at only 7 screens
That's
anyway?
True.
And people would still have watched it on Showtime.
Yeah, it would have been on a lot later, but it still could have hit Showtime, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've actually talked my rating down, I think. But
just be yourself, man.
Yeah. And I think we'll get to Brains, because there's really no sequels or remakes for this. Two sequels,
nah.
Remake, no sequels. So, on to Brains.
Yeah, because I think we pretty much said that we would like to see the source material used as film version.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only way a remake of this should be done.
Absolutely.
With Charles Bush, of course.
Yeah. And he's still around. He's surprisingly young. I thought he would be much older. I think he's around 50.
Yeah. His website is just so DIY. It's just like, wow, you know, that is really cool.
I have to check that out. Okay, I didn't.
Yeah. Like he had, he has reviews for. Like the New York Times from the 80s and the Village Voice from the 80s also. It's just a really cool thing.
Hmm.
And I think he apparently gives acting lessons too.
Nice.
If I were still on the East Coast,
oh,
I'd
God,
like,
yeah.
What the hell? Why not, man?
Uh-huh.
Probably wouldn't have the money for it, but hey, you know, whatever.
It's. I mean, Bush is kind of a hero to a certain subset.
Yeah.
But he's not at all well known, so I don't know if he could get away with charging that much.
Probably more than I have.
Well, that's a good point.
That's my guess.
Uh-huh. All right, so on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Now, you, like I said, you talked me down a bit, you know, with...
I'm sorry I did that.
Knowing the source material.
Because I do love, the play and everything. And Bush. And,
But I was originally going to go 4.5 because, I really enjoyed it, but it had some flaws. But knowing what it could have been, I still have to recommend it, so I'm going to go 4.
You know, I was going to go 3.5, but I'm going to go 4 as well because you really should check out the play. Although, I'm not sure if you'll dig this if you're not familiar with Charles Bush.
Yeah, well, I think we've explained enough. So you'll know if this is within your sensibilities.
Very true, very true. It did have its moments, of course.
I will say, given what we've said, if it sounds like something that's up your alley, you will love it.
Yeah, if you kind of cringe when you hear dudes in drag, you should not watch this movie or definitely see any of Charles Bush's plays.
No.
But this was good satire of the beach blanket bingo movies, which I don't think many people have done. Maybe it was done earlier in the day. Like I'm thinking there was like a Back to the Beach movie or something, but that may not have been satire.
No, those were done pretty seriously.
Yeah,
I think this is. I mean, there probably have been others. The only one I know of is this, and I think that's why Bush did it.
I also like the fact that he was making fun of Hollywood psychobabble, which didn't come across as well in the original source material, but in the movie it does.
Yeah.
That it's just this ridiculous, deep-seated neuroses.
Yeah.
But then like 5 minutes of, something bad happened when I was a kid, and that's why I've done it. But I feel all better now.
And the fact that the professional shrink couldn't fix her, but the college student does in a matter of minutes.
Of course.
I should say the college dropout does.
Right. From Northwestern.
Mm. All right, so what have we learned?
We learned that Thomas Gibson should stick with men's clothes.
And I learned that having multiple personalities can actually save your life.
Oh, yeah.
So, until next week, when we will be reviewing Iron Sky, kicking off our Nazi trilogy. Yes, you know we couldn't wait much longer to do a trilogy. It was going to be a quadrilogy, but then we realized it would have crossed into episode 150, which we
Yeah.
still haven't decided what we're doing there, so no hints or misdirection this week.
Right. It must be something special.
Until
Oh, I got an idea. Why don't we do the big bus?
But we could say we're doing it. They're never going to believe us at this
I
point.
know. Yeah. Ridiculous.
So, until next week, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're, of course, already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, the recommendations list, which this will be on, every movie we've given four brains or better to collectively, the request form, where you can request something you'd like to hear us review, and of course, the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far and are planning to review. You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at
414-368-9861, or for the numerically challenged, 414-368-ZT01.
Till then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There you
are.
are.
As my old grandmother Ingrid used to say, Lars, kittuff and heath and loof and floof.
That's what she said, huh? Well, I guess that does make me feel a little better.
Request form where you can request something you'd like to hear us review. And I just blanked on what's the other thing I need to promote. Oh,
Leave us a voice message by
I'll
calling
back.
us.
I'll get it back.
Okay.
And of course, the movie list.